Friends, here we are once again, Rye in English. This is a special edition on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of April the 2nd, 1982, the beginning of the Malvinas War. We have the great pleasure of being in contact with a veteran from that conflict, Alejandro Meringer. Thank you for being with us.
No, it's a pleasure being with you, Fernando, and this opportunity we have again, all through along the distance, but to be together again, since we've been together about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we were present in a debate for the BBC.
I think it was very interesting.
Yeah, it's always,
if it's well used, it's an opportunity for open doors.
Absolutely. Alejandro, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you grew up, and especially, how was your life, let's say, 3 months before April the 2nd, 1982?
Okay, let's try to go back a little bit and use the memory for the people who are listening to us. This happened 30 years ago, so please forgive me if some details are left in the middle. In that moment, I was 18 years old before this action happened, because I turned 19 on January, so 3 months before that, I was 18. I was finishing high school on December of 1981, and I'm from the city of Bahía Blanca. Bahía Blanca is 700 kilometers from Buenos Aires to the south. It's my home city. It's where I grew up, part of my life, and the other part of my life I passed in the United States. Then I came back to Argentina and continued my life here. And I was planning on entering the university to study to be a civil engineer. I received a telegram establishing that I had to present myself in the army, because I was going to do my military service that I had to do for the country.
The conscription.
Yeah, exactly. The conscription. I was called on February the 2nd of 1982 for us to get in time.
Had you had any military experience before, or
no,
at least
no,
shooting experience?
Nothing. I was just a simple citizen. That, on the contrary,
a simple citizen, a kid.
The last time I hunted something with a gun was when I was 14, and I hunted some rabbits, and then I hunted never more again because I felt like pity for killing some kind of animal. So I was a non-violent person.
Yes.
And I had no military experience at all. No preparation for this at all.
Well, you were a kid, just finishing high school and planning to go to school,
exactly,
to university.
To make a little break there, remember the days that we were in Buenos Aires in Café La Viela, and started to talk a young Argentine that he was 19 years old, and he was, I believe, in the Air Force.
Yes, that's correct.
When I looked at him, I looked at Miguel, who was standing by my, who was sitting beside me, Miguel, the other veteran. I said, look at him, he said, and Miguel says, yes, he's a young person. I said, no, look more deeply, I said, and he says, what are you looking at, Miguel? He says, what do you see? I see a kid. Well, that was us, I said.
Look
at that face, and look at his reactions, and look how he's speaking.
And it's us.
That was us.
Yeah.
And it was like a cold, well, not a cold bucket. I would say 200 liters of cold water that fall on our head and all our body, and they would, like, react. Both of us reacted there and says, oh, man, that was us in that moment.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I entered to do the conscription.
Yeah. In February, I mean.
On February, that's right. So we had that military preparation, like they gave you, that we slept in around 45 days, I believe, was the preparation. And here also in Bahía Blanca, and which was the dependence of the Batallón of Communications, which is the one that finally took me to Malvinas.
Where were you? Army? Navy?
Army. And we were around 350, 360 persons who were participating there. And of the battalion that went to Malvinas, 10 of us went. So imagine the statistics.
Say again? 10 out of
us went.
Okay, and the rest just stay.
The rest, another 60 approximately, went with the military police.
Ah, okay.
The rest had nothing to do and stayed here in the continent.
How were you selected to go? How those 10 were selected to go to the islands?
Well, I really don't know the reason why. Some of the communications is a little bit different from the rest of the battalions and units and divisions that went to the islands. Why is it a little bit different? Because normally the armed forces that when they go, especially the army, the great majority of the people who integrate that are soldiers, and then come officials or military people who are military professionals. But they are in less amount of people, the majority is soldiers. Here is the contrary. Here were 63 or 65% that went of the battalion, and we were 10 soldiers. The rest were all professionals.
Ah, okay.
Why? Because we took communication radios, and we went to establish the communications between both islands and inside and between all the units. That was the destiny that had the Battalion of Communications. 181 was destiny with which is in Bahía Blanca and continues to exist. So our work was very specific, very technical, and very professional in that way.
Okay.
That's why the majority was. So the people that had in charge radio equipments, and when we're talking about radio equipment, we're talking about not the manual ones. We're talking about that were mounted on trucks, very important equipments. They had a soldier that worked with them, so they selected them. And in my case, how to explain to the world this? It was natural in those years when you did the military service here that you tried to find somebody to put you in a position, since you were had to, the military training lasted 1 year, to after the training to be someplace where you could have some free time. Some free time,
yeah,
in my case, was to be able to prepare some subject for the university, do some
That's
other
correct.
Activity.
Yeah, that was customary, yeah.
Yeah, it happens all, I imagine that's around the world.
Yeah, it? Yeah, probably right.
And I was supposedly having a person who was going to try to locate me in a place there where I could be a little bit more free of time. Free of time would be 8 or 10 hours inside the military system and then go out and do my natural life.
And then the war broke out and changed
the
world.
No, in the middle of the training, this person who was going to accommodate me in a certain way, they transferred him to a different place. So I found myself, they had...
On your own.
Completely out. I was with no possibilities of being on a new destiny. So I also passed it. We had different companies, Company A, Company B, Company C, and the Company B, the one that I was, we were calling the flying, the Y-flying, because we were normally 1 meter over the floor, running and shouting and going and back and forth. The rest was sitting down, maybe doing other activities, and we were continuously training and training and training. And at night, while they were sleeping, we had training at night. And so I had a lot of contact with the old soldiers. The old soldiers, for people to understand, were the people of the class before who were finishing their military service and who were doing guards. And while they were guarding us in that way, in some moments I had time to speak with some of them. And I got in good contact with them, and one of them said, I am a friend of the assistant of the chief of the battalion, which was a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell this friend of mine if he can recommend you. I said, well, okay, do it. Imagine a conversation at 3 in the morning that you're dancing like we had to do on those days, doing military dancing, and they say, I never believe it was going to be true. But well, they called me, and I stayed as I was selected as the assistant of the lieutenant colonel. For the people to understand, please, the assistant of a lieutenant colonel is not an administrative one, is not the one that does that, is the person who cleans the room, attends the books, moves around the things. It would be like a butler.
Yeah.
Let's not give yourself a more important, say, oh, he's an assistant.
No, I was
the butler. Let's put the situation in reality. And
that's when you were summoned to the front.
Well, and that day I was given a pass, that the pass permitted, I found that pass, Fernando, and I was here and I was scanning some of these old papers that I found because I didn't want to look at many of those things after the years. And this pass established that, I'll read it to you, it's very, very simple. It says, Orden de Salida Permanente, or permanent going out or permit.
Yeah.
By the present, I authorize the soldier, Meringer Alejandro, class 63, my document number, my military number, to go in and enter the unit. And it says, the porter of this documentation can be dressed as a civilian. That means that I didn't use a military uniform. and that this documentation cannot be retained in any place of entrance. Well, this is on March 19, 1982. March 19. Mm-hmm. So I was given this pass, so I said, well, this is okay. I enter in a civilian. I do my work there as a butler. And after I finish my work at 3 or 4 p.m., I can go home and maybe I can prepare some subjects for the university, do some things. Passed a few days, and around the 25th, the 24th or 25th of March of 1982, when I entered, they said, they're looking for you at the deposit. Okay, I went to the deposit, and they gave me a big sack. They gave me military clothes. They gave me a lot of utensils for eating. And after that, they said, you have to go to the armory. I went to the armory there, and they gave me a gun with all the chargers and everything. And I passed from being as a civilian to 100% military dressed and armed.
Yeah.
And I said, how many bad things could I have done in 4 or 5 days as a butler?
To be punished like this.
I must be the worst butler in the world, I said. In 5 days, I changed my condition. This is incredible, I said. I've got to be really a jackass to do these things this way. And they said, no, that we were going to do some military movements, which was very typical, that goes near Bahia Blanca to some farms or something and to practice, to do military practices on field. Well, okay, that was on a Wednesday. I stayed. Normally, I left and went to my home to sleep. On these days, I stayed in, so I slept in the unit on the 25th, the 26th, the 26th. On the 27th, Saturday, 27th, my chief said to me that, go home, go to your family, say goodbye to them, and tell them that we're going to do some military actions near Bahia Blanca and that we are going to be out for some time. We don't know how much it's going to be, weeks or a month, but we're going to do some military exercises.
They already knew they were taking you to...
They knew, especially my chief, because my chief was one of the persons who most relation had with the General Garcia, who was the chief of the 5th Division of the Army, which has here in Bahia Blanca, which is responsible for the Army from Bahia to the south. So he knew it, and he had done a month ago while we were doing the military preparation. The unit had practiced with the Air Force and with the Navy establishing communications. They had been doing some practicing together 1 month before the taking of the islands. So up to there I went, and I came back to the unit at 4 or 5 in the morning. When I arrived, there was a lot of movement. I got on a jeep with my chief and two other officials, and we started leaving the unit. And my chief started asking me, so you know English? And I said, yes. And you've been living in the United States? Yes. Well, talk to me in English. And I started speaking some words. Imagine that, Fernando, in that moment. I came back when I was 14. And I was 18 in that moment, so it was 4 years that I come back from the States, practically.
It was a little sketchy.
It was on the contrary. I had, in Spanish, an American accent.
Ah, okay, cool.
It was the contrary. Now I have a Spanish accent in English, maybe, but in that moment, it was totally the contrary.
Yeah.
I was an American speaking Spanish.
I understand.
And, well, we went to the naval base that was near Bahia Blanca, which is in the city of Punta Alta, which is Base Naval, which is naval base Puerto Belgrano, which is the biggest naval base Argentina has here. And you can't imagine the amount of ships that I saw. It was like watching those movies from the Second World War or something like that. Incredible, the amount of people and ships and everything. And one of the persons that belonged to the battalion, I asked him, what are we going to do? Because I said, we're going to do some exercises in Pihue. Well, Pihue, for the people to understand, is a city that is near Bahia Blanca, which is around 150 kilometers from the seaside. So if we were going to go and ship there, that means that we were all underwater.
Yeah.
This was all flooded.
Yeah.
There was no way we were going to go to Pihue by water.
Yeah.
And so I said, by Pee-wee. I said, well, I left it there.
Let's say that it's like going to do Navy exercises to Oklahoma.
Exactly, or in Iowa. It was impossible. Or do it in the middle of Córdoba, which is the center of Argentina. It was something that had, it was ridiculous with the answer. So I gave no importance because to a ridiculous answer, I'd lose no time listening to it. So we got on the ship. I went to Malvinas on the Almirante Irizar, which is the icebreaker. We got on the ship, and around late afternoon, it shipped out from Puerto Belgrano, and an officer came to Marcelo, which is a friend of mine that we spent all the time in Malvinas together. It's today we're going to have a session of photographs together 30 years after. And this officer said to us, practically these are the exact words, we're going to make history, we're going to recover the Islas Malvinas.
Wow.
That was on April 2nd in late afternoon or the evening.
How were you feel? I mean, you knew that that meant war.
What I knew in that, for the first thing I had to pass through my head, Fernando, honest,
that's what I want,
was where I, asking myself where I was going. When I put in my head where I was going to the islands, I started to remember what I had been studying in high school, because remember that elementary school I didn't do in Argentina. I did in the States, so I lost all that introduction of the islands that you see, that you study in elementary school. I didn't see it, so the only knowledge I had of the islands was what I've seen in high school. I start to remember what it was, the islands, how they were, where they were located. It was like those computers that start immediately to rewind and find the information where it is. And I remember a friend of my cousin who had been there on a ship a few months ago. She told me how it was, and well, I said, well, we're going there. And I said, and I asked this officer, aren't we going to go to war like this? And he says, no, we're going to take the islands, and then the high authorities will establish what's going to happen. Because the person that said it to me is a very, very good person, an excellent person, and he's a major. He was the second in our unit. He told us in confidence, inclusive when he told it to Marcelo and me, he said, you don't repeat to nobody on the ship, because nobody's to know. Many people you found out on the ship knew the things, but we as soldiers, and the rest of the soldiers, had no idea where we were going. Well, we started navigating down there, and supposedly, that many people don't know, the Operation Rosario, which was named, of taking the island, was supposed to happen on April the 1st, not April the 2nd. The weather made it impossible for us to disembark on April the 1st. That's why we disembarked on April 2nd. We should have done it 24 hours before.
So you arrived there on the second, very first day.
Yes, at 8 in the morning on a helicopter from the Irizar, which was this icebreaker, I arrived at the airport, at the old airport, which is one of the points of the islands of Puerto Argentino. And we enter with Marcelo sitting in the back of a Land Rover with our guns prepared to shoot. They said, prepare your guns to shoot in any moment if it's necessary, because there was still fighting in the house of the governor with the Royal Marines when we arrived. We started entering the small town and looking everywhere, because in this moment we had no idea if the population was hostile or not, or if there was, that we had the message that we had to be prepared to shoot, not because of the population, but because they were not sure if there were Royal Marines distributed in different places, and that they were waiting for us to pass to attack us. Mm-hmm. That was the reality, not for the population, but because there would be more military. Imagine Marcelo and my case, how scared we could be.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, because you weren't trained military, you weren't even trained conscript. You had just started four months before. You were just a student.
Exactly, because I was class 63. I had 45 days where in the shooting gallery we had shot five times, six times. When I talk about five or six times, not 5 or 6 days, 5 or 6 bullets.
Period.
Put it this way.
Literal.
Nothing. We had no way, and we were terribly scared. That's why I always say that the difference between somebody who is a coward and somebody who is supposedly called a hero, practically they are the same person. The only difference is that the coward is not a bad person. It's that he's dominated by this fear. And the person who has some hero actions, he has dominated his fear. On the other, the fear has dominated him, but it's not that he's a bad person. And in that way, it's a question of dominating or not the fearness that you have. Well, we were terribly scared. Somebody who say that he wasn't, it was. But it was a strange mix. I remember when I got off the helicopter and I standed on the land, I felt like I had to do like the Pope, kiss the land, because the ship had moved so much during the last 3 days that I had nothing in my stomach.
How long did you stay in the islands?
I stayed until the last group of prisoner of war.
Oh,
I
left mid-June.
The last group of POWs. If the dates are okay, Fernando, I left on June the 18th, 4 days after the war stopped, on the Norland, which was a ferry boat that was used by England to cross from the Canal de Mancha. And
where were you shipped to?
We navigated during practically 3 days, and we were shipped to the Puerto Madryn. I arrived at the at Puerto Madryn in Aluar. Aluar is an aluminum steel company here in Argentina that produces steel, to their pier. We arrived at the ship, stopped there at the pier of Aluar, and there they put us in someone in buses. In my case, it was a truck where they pulled down a curtain, and we were put in there and taken to the military base in Trelew. From there, they took us to the civilian airport, and we flew to Buenos Aires, to Palomar. From Palomar, we were taken in a bus to Campo de Mayo. Campo de Mayo is the principal military of the army, for the people who don't understand in Buenos Aires. In Trelew, we flew to the city of Buenos Aires, for the people to understand, and inside the city of Buenos Aires, specifically in Palomar, and then to Campo de Mayo. And we were there two days and a half, approximately, where we were bathed, changed our clothes, we ate, and they did some military intelligence, asking us what we had seen, we had not seen, and we had to sign papers saying that we would not talk about the situation.
Were you engaged in many combat situations during your 2 months plus?
Yes, practically April. I had, on my case, I passed it a better situation than past Miguel that will come out later, because Miguel belonged to one of the units that had one of the bloodiest battles that happened. We were more inside the city, inside the town, and going out. I was crossed by enemy fire, and I was shot by Argentine fire also. And the nervousness of that in various situations, I was shot by our own troops. Thank God I wasn't injured, and I can tell this, but we were in a better situation because we were inside the town. And at the end, when the rendition was produced, and inclusive the messages on the radio for as the helicopters were not shooted down and everything, I gave all the messages on the radio, because we belong to communications. And the last thing I did was participating and burying our dead people also. That's why I didn't, in reality, Fernando, I don't know if it's 100% correct, but
no, this is a very vivid account. I mean, as a young person, I'm really interested in knowing the person, because everybody knows
I didn't turn myself in.
You didn't?
I didn't turn myself in, because
you were captured then.
When I escaped in that moment. And then when I was trapped by some British units and I started talking in English, they took me to bury the other. And then I was taken to I was put in a group to go walking to the airport. But I never surrendered.
I understand.
I never surrendered, sincerely. I don't remember saying I surrender or nothing at all. On the contrary, I remember cussing them out or having those actions, and when I opened my mouth in English, it was the worst thing I could have done. And then we were put in, we went to the airport, and we were put in some barns there that belonged to the Falkland Islands tour, and then we were shipped back in the Norland. So I was in the first group, practically we could say that I was in the first group of people who arrived to the island, turn on the lights, and with the last group to turn off the lights.
Were you afraid of, I mean, during those last days, during the last stand in Puerto Argentino, were you afraid of dying?
No, the last days, no, Fernando, because by the end of May, a few days ago, I would say 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had written some things while I was there, and I had the opportunity to send them back to the continent. For example, the official representation of the officer of the battalion, my lieutenant colonel, is like a standard. It's like an inscription that was hanged on the mirror of the jeep that we had there. Well, that represents the chief of the unit. I brought it back, hide it in my personal zones. When I was checked by the British, I started talking a little bit in English, and so I hided this thing and I brought it back. Now it's here, it's hanging here in the museum in Bahía Blanca, and the museum that has the battalion, and the standard of the chief, which would represent the unit, was not captured by the other troops.
What, if anything, and positive things that you brought back from that conflict, from that period of your life?
What things did I bring back?
Positive, no, material, I would say immaterial things.
Yeah, I think the question is very good, Fernando. Number one, I lost two things, and then I'll tell you the other things I lost. Number one, I lost around the month of May the possibility to project. For the people to understand, this communication that we were having, we had been last week sending ourselves mails, organizing ourselves for this hour to be together. If I ask you now, what are you going to do in the afternoon, you'll say, well, I've got to do this, I got to do another things. When you stop projecting, you make no plans.
Just think for the moment, for the
present. Exactly, because you don't know if you're going to have a future. So you don't project.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
No, it's a bad thing. And the other thing that you lose is the total... normally, I don't know why, the human beings, we have the custom to take material things and make possession of them. Say, this is mine, this is my shirt, this is my book, this is my whatever. Well, you lose totally that reason of possession. The material things mean absolutely nothing to you.
What are the things that matter?
For example, I remember when I arrived to the house of my father's, I recognized the house, I recognized the place, I recognized my bedroom, Fernando, but I felt no attraction. It was like if I was looking to the bedroom of a hotel. I had no attraction to that. And when they asked me what I wanted to do, the answer was always the same. Sleep and eat.
The things that you hadn't been doing for more than 2 months.
And I recognize, and I would like to remember that, to bring it back again, that I was in a better conditions than the ones that were in for the first line, and that we didn't eat completely, but we had better food than what they had, and I normally rested below a roof. So my condition was a lot better. So imagine if I passed this situation this way, how the others passed it.
You just mentioned two things that you had lost during the conflict. Can you mention something positive that made you
and grow
advance?
And then I lost
advance?
My youth.
You lost your youth. I mean all of the negative things that come
because
with war.
Because the other day when we were in Buenos Aires, Miguel, which you're going to talk to, people are going to hear later on also, he told an experience that he saw himself reflected in a kitchen and he looked like a little old man. And the reality, that was us. We, from 18 to 19, we were like we were 40 or 50 years old. We lost our youth. We essentially, and that is something we never recovered again. I had the opportunity to study university. In reality, Fernando, I believe that I took the study as a psychological way of putting my head in something else. Something that
totally
costed me a lot, because up to 2 or 3 years ago that I exploded, and I am in a psychological treatment and I need some help, But up to that moment, I had put it away and locked it up and said, well, this passed, and in reality, it didn't pass. So those things, what left me positive?
If anything, I mean, you don't have
positive, to... Positive, yes, one thing. The only solution for mankind is peace.
You are certain about that?
No doubt about it. And like I said when we were there, and when we talked with the in that program that I had to before you came, I conducted a program of 25 minutes for the BBC also, and I remember the words of John Lennon there when he said, "Let's give peace a chance."
Absolutely.
And from that I know that I never again in my life from there touched a gun. I don't want to see a gun. I want to have nothing to do with a gun or nothing that produces violence. I have a tremendous respect, and I show my daughters how to manipulate a knife, how to turn it around for us to not cut yourself to give it, because a knife in a hand to me signifies something else.
Thanks.
I have a tremendous problem when I hear a plane overflying very, very, very low or with big noise. It feels like I want to deep down. So all those are negative. The positive going back would be peace is the solution. Negotiating, speaking, dialoguing, we can agree or disagree. That's okay. That's no problem.
But we don't need to shoot at each other.
Exactly. We don't need to shoot. We don't need to shout. And we don't need to insult.
Alejandro, this was really heartening, and I really enjoyed it, not just as a radio host, but also as a young person who's my generation, unfortunately, doesn't get this kind of accounts very oftenly. I don't know why, but this has been excellent personally. So I appreciate it very much. This
no,
contact.
On the contrary, Fernando, let's say, let's do, I don't remember the exact words that it said in some moments, but... the important thing here is that we passed a very bad situation. We passed a situation that was very difficult. I feel honored and I feel proud of defending my country. That is true. I would never do it again in the way that I do it, but I am proud of defending my country, and I am proud of participating in defense of my country. I'm not proud of the violence. I'm not proud of many of other things that maybe happened during the war, but I do feel proud of defending my country. That's something that's true, and I believe the majority of the people who have fought on both sides, that proudness they have it, like Patricia, the woman whose husband had died, she never stopped feeling proud of her husband. So that I have it, that sensation, and I'm proud of that, but it's very, very difficult for people who are not prepared for these situations to do it. And I've been quiet during many years. I didn't want to talk about this until I found a phrase that made Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was an American writer of the 18th century. And I'll read it exactly, the words, because I thought I think they're okay. It says, "If there must be trouble, let it be in my day, that my child may have peace."
Fantastic. Alejandro, thank you very much for this.
On the contrary, Fernando, pleasure, and let's keep in touch, because it's been really a pleasure to be with you in Buenos Aires and to be with you in the distance.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.